Hello and welcome to the Australian Bitcoin Podcast. This show we have Marina Kovalenko from Kovatax and Sila. Kovatax and Sila, they specialize in accounting and accounting for cryptocurrency in general. They help people with doing their taxes, and I think you guys also with accounting firms how to do their taxes with crypto. And they recently released a new product, Sila, which is an automated product where people can import their transactions into to help them do their taxes. So on the show, we'll learn a little bit about Marina and her story. And then we're going to talking about Bitcoin taxes. Do people need to pay taxes and how that works? I've got some questions, some listener questions about taxes. So hopefully Marina will be able to answer our questions. And then we'll finish off by talking about Kovatax and Sila and how Sila can help people do their taxes. So Marina, welcome to the show.
Hello, everyone. Thank you, Daniel. It's really exciting to be here and looking forward to chat.
Yeah, Marina has been in Bitcoin for quite a few years, and so she's done a lot of these podcasts, so I'm sure she'll give us some good advice. But Marina, like in terms of your story, you have an interesting story growing up where it helped you really understand the value proposition of Bitcoin. So would you mind sharing that a little bit?
Absolutely. That's true, Daniel. My story started in Ukraine. That's where I grown up and that's where all my life was. And our currency in Ukraine at the time when I was growing up was absolutely disaster. So it was high inflation, which means hard earned money could just suddenly became worthless. And that's what happened to my parents' money at some point. I experienced watching my mom buying a professional athlete's key to put like on the top of her wardrobe, so that she could like store money quickly. And just for you to understand, she doesn't even know how to ski herself. This is how bad it was in terms of currency. And my dad at some point had to purchase two cars, same brand, just different color, because he needed to turn his cash immediately into something that can be sold at some point in the future. And this is where my learning was about the currency, how currency works. And at some point, I also experienced that even when I was earning like my first wage in Ukrainian hryvnia, it became worthless at some point. And I had to convert all my wage like every time into US dollar because that was the currency that people used. And that experience really showed me that the currency can be powerful or can be worthless. And you have to choose which currency you actually want to store your wealth in. And first time I've heard about Bitcoin was actually in 2011. And unfortunately, I didn't really understand much. It happened to me that I went to a workshop, how to trade on shares. I didn't really learn much at the workshop. But one of the attendees in the break asked me, have you heard about Bitcoin? And I was like, no, what's that? Is it like some name of the shares? And he said, no, this is like electronic money. And the description was not quite there at that point. And I think it really like didn't explain me really well what it was. And because I didn't do my research, I was like, electronic money, only governments do money, that doesn't sound right. And because he also mentioned that, oh, if you, by the way, put like 1,000 into Bitcoin now, you may become a millionaire like in the future. And I was like, oh, sure, that sounds like a scam. So I didn't do my research in 2011. And I was like really busy because I was planning to move to Australia. And then later on, I've heard about Ethereum and smart contracts. And I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. But hey, where is Bitcoin? Is it still around? And I remember when I check up on the price, it was 1500 per one Bitcoin. And when I've heard about Bitcoin first time, it was $11. And I thought, wow, that's actually expensive electronic money, 1 to 11. And yeah, what I've learned later, of course, was fascinating that it's amazing store of value. I think in Australia, people also experience themselves how they store value. Even Australian dollar is not as bad as other currencies. If you look around, people are storing their value in houses. Is it not funny? Is it like, I find that quite ironic that a shelter where we have to live, right, we also consider as a store of value.
Well, it's kind of similar. It's similar situation to what your parents, like you said, your dad was buying cars. Yeah. So he was using like a transport as a store of value because there was nothing else to store it in. And so houses are kind of similar.
Yeah, like, exactly.
I'm not sure if you read it. There's a book about this, When Money Dies. It's like a pretty popular book. And we talk about how like in Weimar, Germany, 1920s, how people were also doing these things and just buying chairs and furniture to preserve value because there was nothing else, no other way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. This is like really good that you mentioned about this book. I think anyone should read it. It helps like to understand how that all works and how it all aligns together. So that experience like of really like quickly converting cash into objects right around yourself is something that people experience in perhaps like everywhere, right? But what Bitcoin is like a better answer to that. It is a opportunity for you to not like hustle around as much and trying to store that object as well, because if you consider like the cost of storing a car or even for the house, right, there are a lot of like overhead as well and perhaps like middlemen that you have to deal with.
Right. Bitcoin is much better and much more efficient than like as good as a car is for storing value. My friend who's really into cars, he might listen to this podcast. He uses that maybe. I hope he doesn't use that as an excuse to buy another car. but as good as cars are for storing value, I think Bitcoin has a lot of advantages. But yeah, it's interesting what you said, that you also you came upon Bitcoin in 2011. That's very early, but everybody has that kind of experience. They come onto it early and they don't really appreciate it the first time. It takes many years to actually learn about it. So it came across your radar again when you heard about Ethereum and Bitcoin, and you decided to buy in at that point. Did you?
So my second time when I like really heard about Bitcoin again, right, that was like at the conference called NENA, which stands for New Economy Network Australia. And they talk about a lot of alternative economical cycles and how things can be like for housing and things like that. And there was about like smart contracts. And this is when it made me like think about Bitcoin again. And when I checked the price, I was like, wow, that's actually something I didn't learn, really. I didn't understand.
And that, so you were thinking back to your friend who told you to buy it. You're thinking back to your friend who told you to buy it and that you would have been a millionaire. And he was correct.
If it was my friend, I could be a millionaire by that time, right? Because it was just like a random attendee of the workshop, so I didn't really know him. And well, if he's listening for some reason in Australia, then hi to him. It happened like second time, and I was really pushed by that, right? So yeah, it was like a wake-up call for me. I finally woke up and realized that, wow, Bitcoin is actually way more than I thought, right, about it, than my assumption was. And this is when I started like learning and seeking information. And as soon as you are at that point, there is so much information. You can find a lot of books and reading like things like the Bitcoin Standard and other ones. It just helps you to understand what it is and listening to podcasts.
And when you came upon it the second time, were you running already Coiva Tax with your co-founder, or
No, because that was actually all around compliance and advisory for people who are investing in cryptocurrency. And
so you started CoivaTax purposely to actually help people?
Yeah, that was later. That was in 2019 when we started an accounting firm, which was like crypto only, the first firm in Brisbane. And that was exciting time as well. And from our experience of working with compliance for traders and investors, we realized that, well, there is a need for good software that can actually do the right tax implications on transactions, and absolutely important to optimize the tax outcome, because we do have a lot of elections that can be made in tax, and this is like your opportunity to save.
Right. Yeah. Right now, so you're Ukrainian and you have your current background. Obviously, there's a very tragic situation happening even now. But I wonder, what, from the Bitcoin perspective, because I'm imagining a lot of systems, there's a lot of economic problems probably now and financial problems, people trying to get in and out. And I don't know, maybe do you know anything about the situation with Bitcoin in Ukraine right now? Is there kind of do people use it for anything, or do you have any insights?
Yeah, that's a really good question, actually. When the war started in Ukraine, that was like a really like a turning point to see how that can actually be applied during this time that is absolutely tragic and bad times. So there were so many donations in Bitcoin like during the war start, because the government actually had to change their approach, and they looked into looked at themselves as a startup, as they say. And they were like, okay, how can we like quickly get the donations from around the world, right? And that can take days to settle the payments through the banks and their commissions. And what is interesting from that experience that Ambassador actually shared, Ambassador of Ukraine came to Canberra, and he shared at Unblock conference about how they actually did it. So once they announced the wallet addresses for Ukraine and army, so they got so many donations around the world. And the biggest ones were actually in Bitcoin. So they were anonymous donations. So that means that people did want to help, but they didn't want to be known who they are. And if they didn't have that opportunity, they would not get those sizable, large donations. So that's quite fascinating how the technology can really help in critical time.
I remember when the conflict started, I remember hearing a story about somebody trying to escape or get out of Ukraine, and that they were putting their money in Bitcoin to get across the border. Do you know if things like that were commonplace or not really?
Mm-hmm. Right. So once you cross the border of the country, there are always rules around cash, right? How much cash you can bring. Like to Australia, it's only 10,000 Australian dollars equivalent. And during the war, like people try to cash out, actually. That's what happens, because you need cash in many locations to pay for fuel, like to get from one point to another. And it is recommended to take cash and whatever is valuable and just run, right? And during that time, banks didn't give much, you know, there was a low limit per day. And this is when you feel powerless, right? Because bank can actually do that to you.
What was the limit? Do you know?
I think it was like $100, roughly.
So you could only withdraw $100 per day.
Yeah.
From
at
like
some
ATMs.
Point, because everyone started withdrawing cash, and banks, right, you know, don't like that, and they had to do that. So this is when people who were really like native to cryptocurrency, they could at least like do something around that. They could like easily do not worry about whatever is in the bank, because hopefully all the wealth was stored more valuable asset class than just cash.
Okay. Yeah, so it's good to see that Bitcoin's doing its thing and people are using it and it's helping people. But back to kind of Australia, mm-hmm. and back to the very exciting topic of taxes. A lot of people don't really know how Bitcoin taxes work, people, especially new people coming in. So maybe you can explain the basics of, you get a lot of questions, you probably talk to people. So maybe you can explain the basics of how taxes work. Do you need to pay taxes on Bitcoin in Australia?
Yeah, so that's a fun question. Of course, the answer is...
Oh, damn it.
Once you generate wealth in Australia, in some way, it will be captured in tax and you have to know what the tax outcome is, declare and pay tax. And I think it's important to look at this as it is a good thing. I call Australia like my lucky country, right? Because Ukraine is my unlucky country. And this is what you pay tax for, to be in a safe environment with the beautiful roads and good hospitals, hopefully, and all other social benefits that you get in the country. Because when there is a corruption in the country, for example, things are completely different. It's not safe to have business. It's not safe to do business because Big Brother will come, you know, for their pie. That's how it works in a non-regulated environment. So the answer is yes. And how to calculate tax? It depends if you are an investor or a trader. As I could imagine that the majority of listeners would be investing, like long-term, with a vision of long-term, in Bitcoin. So you have to really know where you stand in tax. So if you are an investor, then it means you are, have to calculate gain or loss. And that means once you sell your Bitcoin or exchange it into any other asset for some reason, that would be the event in tax when you have to do that. So if you just buy, let's say if you're doing dollar cost average approach and buying like weekly from your wages, that's fine. That's, it doesn't trigger any tax outcome unless you actually exit in the asset class or exchanging it into another type of asset. Then that would be the time when you have to sit down and calculate. And if you are investing long term, then there is a benefit to that as well in Australia. If you're investing for longer than 12 months, then you will be eligible for the discount, which is pretty massive for individuals, the 50% discount. If you're investing under your trust or family trust or something like that, then it can be also eligible. If it happens to be in a business entity, like a company environment, if it is in Pty Ltd environment, then it will be not eligible. So it's important what your structure is. If you're looking into things long-term, it's always good to discuss with your advisor to see where it best way for you to store long-term your assets.
Okay, right. So basically it's treated as an asset. So you have to, when it appreciates in value, you buy up to gain tax.
Yes, it's treated as a property for tax purposes. So
right.
Bitcoin is considered to be a property. So that means it's an asset that will be a subject to capital gain tax. So that means you have to calculate your gain. Once you sell, you need to know what the proceeds of the sales. So that would be the amount that you receive in AUD minus the cost base, which is like your cost at which time you purchase your Bitcoin.
So it's similar to like a house or any other asset. And so if you sell it and you only have to pay tax at the point when you're selling it, so selling the Bitcoin for cash, or if you're transacting for a different coin, you would also, that would also be a taxable event and you'd have to pay tax at that point.
Correct. So technically, once you lose the ownership of Bitcoin for some reason, and that may happen when you exchange it to AUD or if you exchange it to another asset, and that means that would be the time when the taxable event happened. And you have to know what the tax outcome is and declare that in that financial year.
Right. So I've got some questions about tax that I put in our Telegram group in Adelaide. So first thing, it's more about how do capital gains tax works. So if somebody says with capital gains tax, they thought capital gains does not count as income and was subject to a separate capital gains tax rate?
Yeah, that's a common confusion. And because it does have this name, capital gains tax, you feel like it's another type of tax. However, this is just a type of income, because this income considered to be on capital account, we call it accountants. That means income is capital. It's just a type of income. It's important when it is a loss, because if capital loss is on capital account, that means you actually cannot offset the capital loss against your wages, because wages is your ordinary income, which is a different type of income. This is when it becomes important. If it is just income result, which is like a capital gain, you just have to add it to all kind of income that you have, maybe wages or anything else, and pay the tax at your marginal rate. Because in Australia, we have marginal rate system. It depends on the bracket where your wages fall plus the gains. You may end up with a different rate. For everyone, it's kind of unique, right? Because you have to look into your net result in tax, which is including everything that you have, like wages, dividends, capital gains, interest on the bank account, whatever you have. Maybe you have also business income. So that all adds up in one bucket. And in the end of the day, it will be filtered across all the buckets of the marginal tax system, where you will be having your effective rate overall. But eventually, the income is taxed through the like different brackets. So, for example, there is a first bracket from zero to 18,200, which is tax-free for everyone who is a tax resident in Australia. So that would be taxed at zero rate. And then everything else is just going through the old brackets. And this is why it's complex. But there is no special rate for the capital gain as such.
Okay, so that's something interesting. So what you mentioned, I didn't even know myself. So if you have a capital gains tax loss, you're not actually allowed to offset that against your wage from your job. You can only offset it against income from from other assets. Okay, but yeah, that's actually something new I learned. I don't know. That's interesting.
Yeah.
But basically, apart from that, capital gains is income and adds to your income. So what about if there's no separate tax rate and it's just added to your income? How does the capital gains discount work then?
Yeah, so the net gain adds to your income. So that means you have to calculate what the gain is. So first you calculate the gross gain, and then you have to see in tax if you are eligible for the discount, because you may be, you may not. If you hold for longer than 12 months, then you should be eligible. But and then you would like offset and you would end up with a net gain. So let's say if you got the gain of 100,000 and you are eligible, that would be half to 50,000. And that 50,000 will be added to your wages and other income. And that's what you will be paying tax on.
Okay, that makes sense. So basically, that income gets halved if it's been, if it was held, the Bitcoin was held for over 12 months. Okay, so I have another question from a person. So I'll tell you, so this person's situation was, he bought around 3 Bitcoin, he was buying over time, starting around three years ago. And the average price that he bought Bitcoin was at 35,000 Australian dollars. They now sell Bitcoin at a price of $40,000. So overall, he's selling the Bitcoin for a profit. However, when he started buying 3 years ago, the Bitcoin, he was buying for a much higher price. So he was buying that original Bitcoin for around $60,000. Mm. So basically, overall, he's in profit, but the initial Bitcoin was at a higher price than it is now. So would he be having a capital gains income or capital gains loss?
Okay, that's a tricky question. You know, it works in a way that we have to actually look at each parcel of the purchase. So let's say we are buying like every month. So we have multiple parcels of the purchase. And as you mentioned, some of them could be at 60,000 and some at 30,000. And once we sell, in the end of the day, we have an election in tax, which parcel was actually sold, one at the higher price or one at the lower price. This is when it becomes important, like, to know which method you're actually applying. And at Scylla, we designed LTA4, we call it like lowest tax first out. So that's the concept where we actually looking at each individual parcel and select the one that will give you the best tax outcome. Because it depends on your election. If you select the parcel that was at 30,000, you may end up with a loss, right? With a gain in tax. But if you select the higher cost-based parcel at 60,000 parcel, then you may end up with loss. And this is why the result may vary so much and can be confusing for people, especially when you have like multiple parcels and multiple elections to make. It really comes down to the method that you are using. For the classic method that accountants are using for many years for shares will be FIFO, like first in, first out. They would just grab whatever is first. They're not going to look at the best outcome, for example. That is not the best strategy if you want to save on tax. So you have to really go through all the parcels. And this is why software comes across like really handy, because you don't have to think about it. You just like apply the method that will give you the best tax result.
Okay. So that's something new I learned also. I thought it has to be first in, first out. But there's other methodologies. Just out of curiosity, what other methodologies can you use?
All right. So for example, you can also consider like last in, first out. So that means you grab the last parcel that you purchased. Or there could be high cost base in, first out. That means you just take in the cost base, which is like the highest. The method that we use, like lowest tax first out, means we also consider the discount, because you know you just take the highest cost base. It doesn't mean that you will save more, because sometimes in some specific scenarios, if your gain is eligible for the offset of the discount, that would actually be more beneficial to grab like another parcel.
Okay. That's interesting. I don't completely get the parcel stuff, but I think that's why accountants like you come in handy and like software like yours come in handy. But so with always like accounting methodologies, what can I, for example, apply one methodology 1 year and then use a different methodology next year?
Oh, good question. Yes, in tax, you actually eligible to select your method every year. Like it can be different. You just have to stick and remember that you applied last year. For example, if you used FIFO, then you have to keep that in your records and change from the next year.
Okay. And would your software allow that? Scylla, like
yes.
I can say which method I used last year and which method, like, yeah, it does that?
Correct. Actually the only software that allows you to change your parcel method for each individual financial year in Australia.
Okay.
Yeah. And it can be a disaster if you just go and change all history that you already lodged, right? So in Scylla, you are safe because you can actually elect the method that you already declared and then go further with new ones if you want.
Okay. So that's true. Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. Outside people, for people who are listening, because some people might be listening to this and might think, oh, this is also complicated. And they'll be like, oh, they'll be like overwhelmed. I don't want people to be frightened of like, it can be complicated, but I think like software like yours can make things easier. But even if for people not using software, I mean, most people probably just used first in, first out. And maybe you won't get the optimal outcome over time, but that's probably what most people do, and you probably get a decent result. So you can just do that and keep it simple also. I think, do you agree with that?
True, it depends. You know, like we are not all the same, right? And our portfolios maybe vary as well. So if you like put some small amounts, right, in Bitcoin, let's say you put only like $10, it's not going to make huge impact, life-changing, you know, like selection. But if your portfolio is decent and we're talking about millions, well, the result can vary significantly as well. So definitely something to consider in terms of election of the parcel once your portfolio is sizable.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. If you're just starting out and buying Bitcoin, you don't really have to look into these things. But if you have a decent sum, then you can look at it more in depth. Because, you know, I just want to mention that because getting into Bitcoin is already so hard. There's so much to learn. And now people hear that it's like, you know, if you're just buying $10 Bitcoin, you don't have to just buy somebody listening, buy $10 of Bitcoin and don't think you have to have like always know everything about accounting to do that.
Sure.
But yeah, for sure. If you have a larger amount, then you can do these things to kind of optimize your outcome. Okay, so I'll move on to the next question. So somebody asked, what happens to a self-managed super fund that had Bitcoin lost by digital surge? So for those who don't know, digital surge lost basically.
Okay, well, first a little bit of correction because... saying that lost by digital search, right? It's not quite to that point because digital search actually didn't lose, right? Like technically, until it will be declared by liquidators or administrators to say that, okay, this platform lost so much specific amounts, and that would be in a written form. That would be the only point when the customers of the platform are allowed to declare like a loss in tax. Until that time, until there is like still investigation going on, which is to my knowledge what's still happening with FTX and of course other affected platforms like Digital Search, that's the time when you actually still can be paid. And until there is like uncertainty in tax, you cannot actually take advantage and declare the loss. So you have to look into specific transactions. I believe they also had adjustment transaction in their records. So those events that happened and recorded in the history of your transactions, this is the ones that you can declare and the ones that you have to actually look into tax implications. Because quite often people talk about like, okay, I lost it already. But the reality is that even Mt. Gox at the moment actually paying, like repaying to some customers. So we have to look into specific scenario of the specific client actually to be able to advise if there is a loss or not in tax.
Okay, yeah, but thank you for answering that. So basically you can't really claim it until it's definitely lost and legally made certain. Okay.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, until there is like a written declaration from the administrator or liquidator who is able to advise that this specific amount been lost for on your account, that time when you have clarity, that's the time when it states.
So for the person who asked that question, sorry, bad luck, but she's not going to be happy with the answer. But
It's actually, you know, like the answer is that we in Silo actually do apply like tax treatment to the transactions on their platform. So if the user can just go and download all the records and try to apply that in Silo and see what the result is, that can actually help them to understand how that affects them. Because it depends on the circumstances, if it is a large amount or not, right? I know that there was a correction, like an adjustment that they had to do in the records, and that can actually already be applied in tax.
Okay. So next question. So this person asked, he purchased Bitcoin overseas as a tax resident of a different country. And since then, he moved to Australia, where he's now residing in Australia. And if he sells Bitcoin that he bought overseas as a non-Australian resident, he's selling it now and as Australian resident, do any of these rules apply?
Oh yeah, tax always applies, right? In terms of the rules still exist. So the answer is that once this person actually arrives to Australia and once there is a date where they becoming a tax resident, that's the important date that they need to look at. So let's say if they arrived to Australia on 12th of October 2023, like today, that would be the date when they have to look into all their assets that they have worldwide, including the assets that they come in from overseas. And the market value of these assets will be the cost base of their portfolio. So that means once they sell, if they sell later, they have to calculate the result in tax. So if it is an investment, it will be on capital account. So they have to calculate the capital gain or loss. And the calculation will be the proceeds from the sale, so the amount that they receive of the sale, minus the cost base, which was on the date when they arrived to Australia.
Okay. So the cost base is from the day they arrived in Australia.
That's right, yeah.
Right. Okay, so the next question is about something that's quite a few people that are interested in this, including myself. So it's about spending Bitcoin. So there's a lot of Bitcoiners. We're, unlike kind of crypto people, well, unlike some of them, Bitcoins are very, we're very dedicated to Bitcoin, and we want to spend Bitcoin in shops, purchase things with Bitcoin. So how does all that work if I want to purchase things with Bitcoin?
Yeah, that's exciting. We actually have a few clients who managed to do the challenge to live on Bitcoin by traveling as well. So it's possible, right? And it's exciting. So it all depends on how you manage to organize yourself, including your records and your accounts. So if you spend Bitcoin for your, let's say, coffee, dinner, tickets, that can be considered as a personal use exemption. However, you have to be really organized and careful. So that means you cannot really hold long-term. It has to be maybe you're buying weekly things on Bitcoin. So it's very regularly. And you're not really storing that Bitcoin long-term. So you're buying and initially buying Bitcoin and then spending it in a week. For example, that would be a personal use example. However, you have to make sure that you keep that Bitcoin very separate from your long-term investments, especially because ATO's view is that if it's all mixed together, then it's actually your investment that you're just spending every day, for example. If it is separated, so you use specific exchange, specific wallet for your individual use, where you just spending for things that you enjoy, and it is not in the same accounts and same wallets where you store your long-term vision for Bitcoin, so it just has to be two separated environment. And the main thing that for personal use exemption to mention, that the purchase cannot be over 10,000 Australian dollars equivalent to classify as a personal use exemption in tax. So you can think about this as CGT, been actually around for many years, was designed for houses in the first place because of the property, right? Items being the most valuable, the most expensive. And however, it was covering also small things. So for example, your fridge at home or your washing machine is actually a CGT asset, believe it or not, but it is a personal use asset. That's why the tax office is not after you selling your secondhand fridge, because it is a personal use item that they are not interested in, right? However, Bitcoin can be many things, actually, which is unique. It can be a payment, it can be an investment, it can be trading stock for a business. very complex, actually.
Okay. So the key principles are, you're spending Bitcoin that you intend to spend have to be separate from your investment Bitcoin. So a separate wallet.
Correct. Yeah. If you keep so, it.
Yeah. So that's the first principle. And the other thing you said, that's not a problem. But the other thing you said, it can't be Bitcoin you kept for a long time. So you basically have to purchase the Bitcoin and actually use it within a week or so. So you can't have Bitcoin you store, even if it's a spending wallet, even if you have have a small amount, maybe $1,000 in a spending wallet, and you keep it there for 6 months, if you then use that to purchase something, technically that wouldn't count, or?
Yeah, good question. This is where the ATO you know, doesn't have like a clear cut guidance, but the intention is that 6 months is a long time. So if it goes up, it's definitely going to be taken as you are storing with a hope to get that gain. So they would want that to be taxed. And for that reason, if you want to apply the personal use exemption, you have to be like really quick. You have to like purchase and spend, where they can see that there is not much gain anyway, because you cannot really get a lot of gain, you know, in the week. Sometimes you can, right? But if it's regular and often, that's fine. If it is 6 months, they will say that that looks like an investment.
Okay. I don't know if you're allowed to answer this question. If you can't, then it doesn't matter. But if you're just doing that, spend like holding it for 6 months, but you're just spending it on pretty small items, like maybe $80, $50 occasionally, do you think technically the ITO is really going to care about that? Or even if it's technically not quite right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's a good, like, gray area technically, because like I said, the rules are not very like specific to days and weeks and months. But the indication is that 6 months is half a year. That's a long term already for them. And it just depends on the size, right? If it is a sizable wallet, I'm sure the ATO will be very interested in what you're keeping for half a year. If it is a very small amount, it just depends, you know, like it can be arguable, but yeah. Do you want to be in argument with the ATO right. And dispute, you know, that's just could be not worth it.
Okay, cool. Thank you. So, and the $10,000 threshold, so that's $10,000 within a year. And is it for per item or is it like a total threshold?
Right. This is like per purchase. So it's per every time, basically.
Okay. So you could purchase $100,000.
Yeah.
Things. But obviously, if you're doing that, yeah, you probably want to purchase the Bitcoin and use it straight away. You wouldn't want to store $100,000 and for 6 months and then purchase something, because yeah, then you could get in trouble.
Yeah, it's kind of like they look at this as, I guess, like in design of this rule, right? They were thinking about, okay, if it's over 10,000, that's kind of like a luxury item. You're buying a car or something like more significant, right? This is where they consider that as an investment rather than an exemption. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay. So, yeah, that's something else. I actually thought it was a cumulative threshold per year. So that's something new I learned also. Another, this is a pretty simple question, but if somebody bought Bitcoin in Australia and sold it overseas, they went on a holiday and sold it overseas, do they have to pay tax?
Okay. Well, it is a bit of confusing question for tax purposes, because the question will be better if we like think, okay, once you sell it and you are overseas on holiday, so you may be a tax resident of Australia still, just enjoying the holiday, or perhaps you went overseas because you left Australia indefinite and you became non-resident, and the answer will vary. So if you are still like on holiday and you planning to be back to Australia, then, yeah, you still have to pay taxes in Australia. If you already exited Australia and you sold Bitcoin and you are non-resident, that's a completely different scenario. And then it depends. If you live in Australia indefinite and become a non-resident, there are two choices like to make. You can say that you are selling all your portfolio on the day when you are leaving, on the day when you are becoming non-resident, you have to calculate all your portfolio at market value and apply that in tax and calculate if it results in a gain or loss. Or you can make an election to do that once you actually literally physically sell your assets. Then that means you have to still file tax returns to the tax office every time when you sell assets, and maybe the price will go up, who knows, right? So there are two strategic elections to think about for non-residents.
Next question. With cover tax, do you guys accept Bitcoin for your services?
Oh, yeah, that's fun question. Yeah, we do. We accept that from day one.
Okay, great. So like if an existing business wants to accept Bitcoin, from like a tax perspective, what do we need to do? Like, what are the implications?
Yeah, good question. Right. So it is not like very straightforward and easy. However, if you are well organized, it can be run very smoothly. So as a business accepting payments in Bitcoin, you have to like think how you're going to like first give that information to the customer. So you have to put the wallet address, perhaps on invoices. So get organized on that front. Once you accept payments and actually businesses or other individuals pay you in Bitcoin, that would be an asset that your business receives, right? So in a business environment, it depends if you are a company, if it's your LTD, storing long-term will not bring the gain down because you will be not eligible for the discount. So that means you have to like consider what you're going to do with a Bitcoin that you receive. Are you going to store it or you're going to like sell it immediately because perhaps you need to pay GST or any other taxes? So that's like two questions. Eventually, you also will decide like based on your behavior in business, if it is an investment or is it actually a trading stock for you? Because if you like accepting that as a payment, the default position that it is trading stock perhaps. So, but if you are actually going to store long-term, you may like reclassify to an investment. So for the business, I think for the purpose of cash flow, it is probably easier to consider that it is trading stock. But you would have to track those items, right? And make sure that you account for them in business.
And okay, and what about if a business has employees and wants to pay its employees in Bitcoin? I'm just curious, do you guys do that by any chance?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We also offer to be paid in Bitcoin. Right. So again, that also has a few options how you can organize that as a business. One is physically buying Bitcoin and actually transferring to the individual's wallets and declaring that on PAYG as a wages and paying tax. But that would be subject to fringe benefits tax, which is another tax on the top of other taxes. So that means that perhaps not the best case, because that means you providing property to individuals. Instead of cash benefit, you're giving them property, which is Bitcoin. The easiest way to organize, do not worry about the fringe benefits tax, would be actually electing for employees to be paid through another provider where they can convert that into Bitcoin and send Bitcoin to the employee. So that means you just only transferring AUD to the provider and they would be that part that helps an employee to purchase Bitcoin. That would be like more niche and way less paperwork in terms of compliance for the business and also like avoiding the additional fringe benefits tax.
Okay, cool. That's a lot of very useful info, Marina. I think everybody can see, you guys definitely know your Bitcoin tax, everything that needs to be. You passed over questions with flying colors. You guys definitely know your stuff.
Well, yeah, sure. That's what we do every day.
So, Marina, what about your service, Covatax and Scylla? So maybe you can explain a bit what you guys do there and how they work.
Yeah, sure. So at Scylla, we do software. That means we can help you to automate the process where you can easily download all your transactions from exchanges or wallets. And transactions will be processed so that you can just download your report for tax and then you can self-lodge or go to a tax agent. At Covatax, we provide professional services for compliance and advisory. So that means we can actually go further and help you with the compliance work or advice on tax for your specific circumstances.
Right. And so basically, Scylla helps you. It's an automated service. It helps you do your taxes. So you can import your tax reports from exchanges. So we've done an integration with you guys. So you can import your tax report from Hardblock into Scylla. and it's going to create a report for your accountant. And like you said, it's going to choose that optimal method for you.
That's right.
I would say for anybody using it, from importing transactions from Hardblock, because I tried it and just check how it works. One thing I would recommend is to just go through if the transactions were kind of reconciled the way you want to, in terms of, by that I mean, when people do withdrawals, when you do withdrawals from like Bitcoin withdrawals or Bitcoin deposits from Hardblock, by default on Scylla, it's counted as actually a Bitcoin SIU event or Bitcoin purchase event. But if that wasn't the case for you, if you were just actually depositing or withdrawing Bitcoin, then you would have to kind of change that, convert that transaction from a purchase to like a deposit or withdrawal.
Yeah, that's right. If we go into details, so under transaction area, you can see all the details of each transaction. And for example, if you withdraw anything from Hardblock, we don't really know, like maybe you send to your friend as a gift, then you just go and classify that as a gift. Or if it went into any other location, then you can change that to transfer out to another place.
So you could possibly use it if you're purchasing things with Bitcoin, mm-hmm. and you want to make it simple for yourself. I'm guessing you can classify it as like a value purchasing things, and then it would be reconciled as a Bitcoin SIU event. So then all your taxes, you'll be good and you don't have to worry about everything. Is that correct?
Right. So the default position just like applies safe tax treatment. So that means any withdrawals will be taken as taxable events. So that's okay. Not going to put you at risk with a tax office. But if you know that that was not a taxable event, that maybe it was something else, then you can still go and change that.
And so what do you think the product, who do you think it's good for and who do you think it's not good for?
Right. Well, it's definitely good for Bitcoiners who are storing and are investors in Australia. So our product is all fit for Australian market. So that means we designed the product with a view to optimize the tax result for Australia specifically, as we are in Australia only. And that's the best fit for us, Australian tax residents.
Okay. Yeah, well, yeah, I like I said, I checked it out and it's a pretty easy to use product. And yeah, I think you guys are doing a very good job.
Thanks, Daniel.
So, Marina, is there anything else you think we missed or you want to talk about?
I think we discussed a lot of things. And yeah, it's been really great to talk about the history and the current tax treatment. What I can add is that we're still evolving in terms of tax treatment in Australia. As you may know, that taxation board is still looking into everything and deciding what the future may look like for all the complexities in crypto space. It's not going to change as much for investors that are investing long term and not doing much of, you know, jumping around and doing some bunch of different innovative ideas. I think for someone who is more like whole cost averaging and storing with a vision for long term, it's actually pretty stable in terms of tax. For someone who is experimenting and doing a bunch of new things, this is where the risk usually sits in tax. And this is where it is a bit still unknown in crypto space, what the tax office may rule out, you know, for projects that are more complex. And it's exciting, you know, for me personally to see that for the first time hearing in 2011 about Bitcoin and thinking it was a scam, how far we went. And now the industry is growing, evolving. We're looking forward to Bitcoin ETF as a concept, because I think that would really bring the industry large players. But, you know, nothing will replace Bitcoin, really, in the first place. That's what I want to say. It's just you know, I'm still like think it's fascinating that El Salvador consider Bitcoin, you know, as their currency, right? That was a dream of some people in the past. I remember when I was at Meetup and someone was sharing that idea that the government will introduce Bitcoin as a payment and that may become actually like a big thing for big players like BlackRock. At that time, it looked like it will take 20 years, but here we go in 2023, it's already happening. That's what my summary. I think it's still the beginning.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's looking at some of these things like El Salvador adopting Bitcoin and a lot of other things. It's just like, it's almost 5 years ago, if you told somebody, would have thought, yeah, maybe, but it just seems a bit too good, too crazy to be true. It's just like in theory, but it's like, it's almost hard to believe. But yeah, right. Like we are here and things are moving. And like you said, Bitcoin is staying strong. And also in terms of a tax perspective, if somebody's dollar cost averaging and just buying and holding Bitcoin, another advantage of that is that it becomes much simpler. Like you say, your tax obligations are much simpler. People who get into do trading, high frequency trading, going to between different coins, things can be very complicated then. But if you're just doing Bitcoin, dollar cost averaging and holding, it's much easier and things are much better for you. But Marina, thanks for coming on. And yeah, like I said, that was a lot of good information about Bitcoin and taxes. Thanks for sharing that. I was actually very surprised about how much I learned. I thought I knew most things and I thought I knew the answers, but I came and was, oh, wow, there's a lot of things I didn't know. So yeah, thanks for sharing that and thanks for your time.
Thank you, Daniel. It was my pleasure and love being a part of the 21 million club.